And planning committee to order. Everyone's there that needs to be there. First order of business, I need approval for the February 3rd minutes of the AIP committee.
I'll move it. Hilda.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. So Matt Sosa is up first with planning department, please.
Good morning. All right, so the first agenda item I have is authorizing a public hearing for CDBG grant for fiscal year 2020. This is for housing rehab funds. Different from last month, which we authorized one for planning infrastructure. These are, again, still 2020 fiscal year grants that they're just coming hot and heavy and making up for lost time. This is to continue a grant that we basically are doing right now. We're implementing with Arbor Housing and Development to do water, sewer, and lateral upgrades for income qualified households. Yep, that's about it. I don't know if you have any questions.
I'll move it.
Second.
Okay. It's pretty much the same resolution that we do year after year, right, Matt?
Correct. Yeah. The only, I really wish I could have just done these all last month together, but the way they announced them, one is due in March, the other is due in April. They announced them a month apart and I didn't have time to get them both on the same agenda. So here we are just basically doing it all over again.
Okay.
When will these funds be available for the public?
So we have a current grant that we're working through that's basically funding these projects that expires at the end of June. This grant would basically just pick up where that one leaves off. Once we close that out, I think OCR said that they anticipate awarding funds sometime late spring, early summer.
Any other questions? Okay, if not, we have a motion and a second. Can I hear all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, motion is carried. Go ahead, Matt, second item.
Yep, second item is just authorizing the submission of that grant for the CDBG funds.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. I assume there's no questions. So all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Next item.
And yeah, so the last item, back in June, you authorized a reallocation of funding of $30,000. That's in the same CDBG grant for that well and septic laterals for rental assistance. I'm just proposing that we move the $30,000 back to housing and rehab line item where it originally was. Unfortunately, nobody took advantage of that program. None of the money was spent. And as I said in the previous agenda items, that grant ends at the end of June. We have a wait list of people who could utilize that funding right now. And I just think now's the time that we just move the money back and use it when we can.
Motion. Second.
Are there any questions?
Questions?
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carried. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, everybody.
Next up is Eric Rose. Are you Zooming or are you there, Eric?
I'm here.
If you can listen, hold it up in front of that camera.
Hey, that was good. We can see it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just one item, requesting authorization to use funds from the COB flooring capital project account to purchase carpet and installation for the third floor hallways using state contract for the sum of $23,655. The papers I handed out to you folks, the colored areas indicated 2-1, 2-2, 2-3, and 2-4 are the carpeted areas. For those that don't have that paper, it's the third floor hallways from the lobby area to the right, all the way down towards the old South Conference Room, and to the left, all the way down towards Law Library. These were left out of the initial bid for the core project due to budget concerns and trying to run lean on it. So that's why we're requesting it now. They're married and or kiss the areas that are going to be affected by the court's new carpet that you guys have seen around the building.
That's state bid.
It's state contract. We did get a price from an on-site contractor and it was considerably higher. So when we looked into state bid, it was a lot lower, obviously in the tune of like $12,000. So the state contract we've used before for carpet in the past, they've done a wonderful job. They can get in and out and leaves us some room for to not have that exposure with the expense.
And real quick, if I could, there's $15,000 in the COB flooring capital project. So the remaining seven and change we'd propose to take out of the building project, which has enough, more than enough money to cover that $7,000.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
So I walked a couple weeks ago. Jack and Chris and I did a walkthrough of, I just wanted to see what the updates were on all of the building projects. And as we were walking down the hallways by the back courtrooms, Jack made the statement, yeah, at some point we're going to have to replace this carpet. And it is pretty bad. It's pretty worn out. So I, you know, being there walking on it, I agree. This is a good project. I would hope we don't do it until after construction is done, so people aren't walking on new carpet with drywall and what have you. But
correct. There's a fine line. We're gonna try to transition out and get it done within the time frame. So when they open up for the courts on that piece,
okay,
we're still not having a ton of disturbance on their end either. So yes.
It's why do we use carpet versus some kind of other flooring? So some kind of mandate or something?
Not necessarily. There's a few reasons why. One is the sound. The noise is horrific with the carts and the deliveries constantly through those areas with random stuff. The other issue is slip falls. We get someone spills a coffee and doesn't report it. We've had that happen, you know, in the past. And also with the carpet, is it may get a little worn at times if we stay on top of the main pathway, so to speak. We can pull it. It's easy to pull, where ceramic tile or tile of that level is pretty tough to do a quick repair and clean up with. So that's another nice option with it.
And just like your floors that you have in that building, they're carpet tiles. So they can pull and patch much quicker, like Eric said, than LVT or some of the certainly ceramic.
Yeah. Prep works a lot less as well.
Could I ask a question? So is Davidson Furniture getting this bid, or who is going to do the installation?
Through state contract right now, I got the number from Davidson that you're looking at.
Any other questions? Okay.
I got a question. Is it block? Is it block carpeting, or is it just a roll
like this?
Yes.
Files. Okay. We got a motion and a second.
It's like a burnt umber color.
Okay, motion in a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Next up, Jack or Chris Brewer?
Nothing this month.
Okay. So the next item on the agenda has to do with Jamie Johnson presenting for Steuben County IDA. I just want to inform the committee members and all those present that I have to remind you that Jamie is subject to several NDAs right now, non-disclosure agreements. Therefore, there's going to be certain things that he cannot talk about. And I know that some of you might have questions, and we're going to have to honor those NDAs.
Thank you, Robin, and thank you, everybody, for the opportunity. I will say we are extremely busy right now, and it's a good busy. So we're very pleased to say that we have several projects that we are working on, and you know, when we can talk about them, we absolutely will share any news that we have. But the things that we can talk about, are still exciting, and I wanted to share a few things with you. First off, I want to start with something that seems like a relatively simple item, but is really helping a lot of businesses in the community. The Steuben County, as you know, Steuben County and the IDA and Corning Enterprises invested into REDEC to help support some funding to help redirect some funding to support to businesses throughout COVID. And, that program that REDEC developed with the assistance of those parties, originally was intended for an emergency relief program. And, we did help a number of businesses through that, the early period of COVID. But then we began to realize that as the federal government created the PPP and the EIDL and all of these other incentives, that our program, really was not being utilized to its fullest potential. So just recently, we worked with REDEC and we repurposed that program into more of a long-term relief program focused on assisting businesses that have had to either make changes or adapt or have had new opportunities presented to themselves because of COVID. There are businesses that have had new products that they've developed. Businesses have had to purchase additional equipment and machines and processes, and even in many cases, rework their business structure to allow for remote work. So the program, which was originally intended to be a two-year loan, was expanded to allow for terms of 66 months, with the first 6 months being no principal and no interest payments, and really focus on the long-term growth of businesses and help them reinvent themselves or reinvest into their businesses in order to move forward and grow. We announced that last week, and I'm pleased to say that we already have 11 businesses that are working through their application process in the pipeline, ranging from businesses from Hornell to Wayland to Painted Post, Irwin, and Corning. So we're very pleased with that. And again, the business, the focus of the program really is more about, instead of just sort of propping the business up, it's more about growing your business going forward. So if you know of any businesses or would like more information on that, you can contact either Jill or I, and we can put you in touch with REDEC to get more information. But I think it was a good move to really refocus those funds, to get those funds out on the street to help our businesses in a manner that will allow them to grow moving forward. Renewable energy. I think, Jill is becoming the solar guru across the state. We have 9 projects that we are working on right now. We expect 2 of those to make application in March. And we've got 7 others that are in some, process of development. Some of those are going through site plan. Others are just reaching out. But solar is a hot, a hot topic right now throughout many of our communities in Steuben County. And, while there's not a lot of job impact with this, it does help support renewable energy and green energy initiatives. It also provides additional revenue streams for those communities, many of the rural communities that would otherwise not see the level of investment that would generate this kind of tax revenue for them. In addition, we still have all of our wind projects moving forward. 8 Point Wind is expected to make application. That's in Greenwood and West Union. And we've been talking with them. They expect to make application to the IDA in March and hope to begin construction later this year, as does Barron and Canastillo Wind as well. So we're hoping that this is going to be a significant year for investment in renewable energy. Having said that, one of the things that we are seeing, and you know, the old adage, farmer adage, you got to make hay when the sun shines, you know, is absolutely true here. And this is one of the things Jill and I have talked about. We are finding that there are serious gaps in our transmission capacity in Steuben County. And, you know, we're being told, and we've confirmed this, that not only are there areas in the county that are seeing no investment because of the lack of transmission capacity, but there are other areas that once these projects are built out, we will be at full capacity in the NYSEG grid for transmission of renewables. We're just now starting to have conversations about what that means. I don't think we're alone in the state as far as that issue. You can see with the governor's proposed budget that even the state is starting to invest in transmission capacity in areas to try to get power to where it's needed. But, you know, once we get through these several renewable energy projects, it'll be very interesting to see what occurs after that because of the lack of transmission capacity in the NYSEG system. Alstom, you know, we've all heard the good news about Alstom. We're eagerly awaiting their notice to proceed. The board did announce the Metra contract. And now, as I said, this notice to proceed is sort of the next step and will really free up Alstom to begin spending money. We've been working closer than ever with our partners at the Hornell IBA to assist them as they work through some development opportunities with Alstom to build a new shell manufacturing facility, and have actually have JC from our staff working with Sean Hogan at the Hornell IDA to do the EDA application in order to do the site development work on the site where the car manufacturing plant is going. This is a great partnership and a great opportunity for us to become more involved in the Hornell community. And we appreciate the efforts of the Hornell IDA and look forward to continuing to work with them on this. But JC has a lot of experience with EDA as a funding organization. And, we have offered that experience and help to the Hornell IDA, and they've taken advantage of it. So we're very excited about working with them on that. Along with that, interestingly enough, we've always talked about supply chain capacity with the rail car industry. And while the supply chain has been here and has been working with Alstom and others throughout the region, they've always been a little hesitant to commit to investment. And this Metra contract, I think, is changing that. Before the rail car industry was, a roller coaster ride. It was contract to contract, and you saw major swings in employment and major swings in investment. And, with the Acela contract and now the Metra contract, there is, this is a long-term play for the rail car industry in Hornell. And as a result, we're starting to see the supply chain businesses start talking about investment. We're working with a company owned by Motherson out of India on a new greenfield location. And we're also finalizing a state incentive. We should have the final incentive letter for a supply chain company that will be co-locating with Gunlock in Wayland, which is a real exciting opportunity because they're basically going in and taking over the seating division of Gunlock that Gunlock announced last fall that they were going to be relocating to Iowa. And they're coming in lock, stock, and barrel and taking over the space, taking over the equipment, and hopefully rehiring all of those employees that are going to be impacted. So I'll be able to announce more details on the company and their intention, hopefully in the coming days, if not weeks, then we'll make that available to all of you. But again, it's a very exciting project because they initially came to us and said, we need a greenfield location. And we said, well, what do you do? And they said, we, do upholstery work. And we said, well, geez, we've got a great partner that you should talk to. And they initially said, no, we don't want to co-locate. And suddenly when they got in there and started talking, both companies saw it as a great opportunity to partner. So we're really excited about that. Last week, after years of working with the county, and me continuously pestering Pat Donnelly before he retired, we closed on the sale of the Babcock Ladder property. So that is off of our books. We do have the DEC easement, environmental easement in place, thanks to the efforts of the county. And we are looking forward to Clark Specialty growing at that location. They're going to be investing in their powder coating line, their painting line, installing a 10-ton crane, and creating an additional 10 jobs in addition to the 31 that they already have. So again, we're excited about that. Finger Lakes Community Health, they purchased what we refer to as the old Guthrie parcel in our industrial park right next to us. They were out doing testing this past week and expect to start construction on their new community health facility and center this summer, which will be a nice addition to the industrial park. Exit 43 in the town of Irwin, I-86, we've been working very closely with Three Rivers Development in the town of Irwin on their redevelopment plan. I would say that we're a little bit more cautious than what they are on what the consultants have identified as a best use. But we are going to be working with them to research what the highest and best use for those properties are, because I think you're going to see some redevelopment efforts there. The Gibraltar development, which is the old Ames store, likely is we know it's under contract and is likely going to be sold. So we want to make sure that whatever redevelopment opportunities that happen there are done, in cooperation with the planning efforts that the town of Irwin undertook. And then just, one final thing that I wanted to update everybody on, and then I'm happy to answer any questions. We are in the process of doing our annual IDA reporting, and we honestly didn't know what the reporting was going to look like this year. With the impacts of COVID, we fully expected job numbers to be down. We just didn't know how bad they would be down as we go into our annual reporting, which is our 60 IDA projects that we have. And as of last Thursday, when we looked at the numbers, and we still have about 10% of the reports to come back, I'm pleased to say that we were only 54 jobs off of where we were last year at this time. So those companies that have been impacted were the ones that we fully expected to be impacted, hotels and some of the other retail establishments that we've helped over the years. But overall, the job numbers seem to be, much more stable than what I expected them to be, which is a positive sign that the economy is still churning along and that businesses are still making and hiring employees. Biggest issue we have, and it's interesting because we've been talking about this for years, is workforce development. And just last week I was talking with Upstate Farms, and they're ready to hire another 17 people, but they can't fill the positions that they have available right now. They said, people either can't pass the drug test or show up for work for 2 days and then call in sick and decide they don't want to come in anymore. So, we still are talking about that with our partners. The issues are much more complicated now because of the benefits that are provided through the federal government for unemployment. There really is no stick, if you will, to have people reengage in the workforce. And, that is something that we're going to, that businesses are struggling with, and we're going to have to figure out how to deal with over the coming months, as we get back to some level of normalcy. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. We're very busy here, and we look forward to a very positive 2021.
So Jamie, I just want to clarify something. It's not a question on the recovery loan fund. As we know, I want to remind everyone that we, as a county, participate in only supplying administration money for the administration of the loans. So we're not in the decision-making process, that's for sure. But we're happy to support in the administrative sense because we want REDEC to be successful and help our businesses come back after COVID, for sure.
And just so you know, Chris Brewer is the chair of REDEC from his previous life, and was engaged in the discussions through that role to assist with the updates or the changes to the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's done a great job.
Yep.
Kudos to Chris.
So I have a question.
Go ahead.
So Jamie, you may not be able to talk about it. It might be one of those ones that Robin was talking about, but
What about the Amazon project in Bath?
I can neither confirm nor deny anything that is going on with a company that is looking in Bath.
Next question.
Jamie, is there any advantage, this Gary Swackhammer, is there any advantage to the county for having all this renewable energy when they run on subsidies, the pilot, and then the higher rates that it's going to cost for electric to be generated through them? What's good for Stuart County?
So, you know, a few things, Gary, and this is when, you know, the way we look at it, and we perform a cost benefit analysis on each one of these projects as we take a look at them. I think the first answer to that is that, you know, these are opportunities that are being created by the state and federal government to advance their renewable energy goals, whether you agree with them or not. And they are opportunities that are being presented to us. The construction jobs, especially on the large scale projects, are significant. When you look at the large scale wind, you know, there's going to be for a period of 18 to 24 months, over 300 construction jobs for each one of those projects. So if you think about them getting stacked up, there's going to be a significant employment impact on the construction industry for a fairly large amount of time. The wind projects also do create some level of employment, although it's not significant. There are, you know, equipment, you know, there are folks that have to run those things and maintain those things. So each one of those projects creates about a half a dozen jobs long term. The solar projects are a little bit different because they really aren't providing direct jobs, but they are, you know, providing opportunities for subcontractors and suppliers. You know, they've got to mow the lawns and keep the snow plowed and things like that. The real benefit in my mind is the property tax and the pilot opportunity that is presented, because you know, these things likely would not come here without a pilot, and the pilot really isn't a true benefit when you look at what the assessed value would be versus what the pilot numbers are. And we've got our cost benefit analysis can prove that out. There's a minimal benefit, but what it does is it provides long-term security for these projects to go out and generate investment. And to get bank financing to put them together. Now, you know, I've used Troopsburg as an example many, many times, because, you know, Troopsburg is generating, you know, their tax base generates somewhere around $500,000 annually. The Canisteo Wind Project is going to, and the host community agreement that goes along with it is going to more than double that for the community. So suddenly, there is a true windfall of revenue in a community that would likely never see that level of investment happen through sort of natural construction. It would take hundreds of homes to have to be built in order to generate that kind of property tax revenue for that community, the school district, and the county. So there is a substantial impact to these communities on the revenue generation side of the equation. Now what the communities do with that is, you know, that's their own decision, but we are encouraging them as we talk with them to think about things like investing in long-term infrastructure. We've actually even talked with some of the larger scale projects about, you know, opportunities that we can partner with them to look at expanding broadband capacity. Utilizing not only their construction that they're undertaking, but even taking some of the revenue that would otherwise go to the community and diverting that into broadband capacity. So it really is a in my mind, a financial benefit to the communities more than it is a jobs benefit. And I can't speak to the increased cost in generation and those, because I think there are a lot of things that factor into that. And I just am not knowledgeable enough about, you know, the cost allocations of energy generation as it relates to the bills that you and I receive in the mail.
So, Jamie, it is the Steuben County IDA's function to negotiate these pilots, not the municipalities, correct?
So, under the 487 law, if you've opted into 487 or opted in, Jill, help me out here. I get confused. If you've opted into 487, which not a lot of our communities have, but if you have opted into 487, you can either provide them with the 487 benefit, which is a 12-year benefit. The first 7 years is a 100% abatement, or you have the ability to negotiate directly and negotiate a pilot. Now, we have met with many of our communities who, those especially that have opted in over the years. And, you know, once they understand what it means to negotiate a pilot, they, you know, normally redirect them to us, or quite honestly, the companies come specifically to us because that only is one piece of the tax benefit. So while they may be able to get the 487 from the town or the school district, they aren't getting it from the other two taxing entities that are out there. So, you know, they don't want to have multiple incentives that they're trying to negotiate. So they just come to us. And we have a standard abatement program for renewable energy. Both wind and solar are based off of benchmarking that have been done across the state. And you know, our board has set those policies and determined those rates based on that data that we've collected.
Thank you. Any other questions for Jamie?
In these applications for these projects, does it show the subsidies that's being provided by the state and federal government?
No, it does not. Directly show what those subsidies or those renewable energy credits are in our application.
How would we find that out?
I believe it, you know, it would be a matter of public record. The first thing we could do is just simply ask them. I mean, we know that the state NYSERDA annually allocates their REC credits, their renewable energy credits. And that's easy enough to find. We can go to the NYSERDA website and find that information out. On the federal level, we might have to do a little bit more digging, but they are credits that are public information. And honestly, they're credits that are reducing. One of the things we're struggling with right now, I would say struggling with, but we're having a discussion on, is, you know, the impact of the reduction in the state subsidies. And how it relates to what is being requested from us as far as a pilot. And we're getting some pressure to reduce our pilots based on the fact that those numbers are starting to go down on the state and federal level. And to this point, you know, we've said, no, we're not going to reduce that number.
And just to add, the companies usually do at least put, they'll say NYSERDA in the budget, or they'll say income tax credit. We don't get a definition of what, you know, line items are included in NYSERDA per se, but they usually do list out at least, you know, those entities that have helped with the budget.
Okay, any other questions?
Jamie, this is Kelly. Is there any update you can share on the Phillips facility?
I can neither confirm nor deny that there's anything going on at the Phillips facility. But I can tell you that we have been engaged in conversations with Phillips and their team recently, which is more than I can say has occurred over the past several years. And I must thank Senator Schumer's staff for helping get engaged with them. We've had some very good conversations with them, and we understand what they're looking at doing and what their intentions are at the site. But at this point, they have asked us to not release any information until they have made a final decision as to what the future of that location looks like.
Thank you.
Jamie, this is Hilda. I have a question about Upstate Farms. You said there are positions that they're waiting to fill. Are they skilled positions? Is that why they can't find people?
Nope, they are line positions, packers, inspectors, material handlers. They have actually come to an agreement with the union. And I didn't get into the details with Dean about this, but you start out on the floor at $19 an hour at Upstate. with benefits. And these are not skilled positions, Hilda. These are, you know, high school education, quite honestly. You could walk out and start making $19 an hour.
So therefore we continue to deal with the same old workforce issues.
Yeah, they're just exacerbated by the fact that unemployment benefits continue to get extended, because now there's nothing to encourage individuals to reengage in the workforce if they can continue to draw unemployment benefits almost indefinitely at this point. And that was my political view coming out right now.
Any other questions? Okay, if not, Jamie, thank you very much for the update. Just generally, though, when you're saying you're very busy, are you getting a lot of inquiries, a lot of tire kickers, or some serious stuff?
Some serious stuff, you know, and it's not, it's across the board. You know, it's as I said, the supply chain growth, you know, in the Hornell area, which we're excited about. You know, it's new developments, which we're excited about. It's, you know, as I said, the renewable energy, you know, and it just goes to show you this opportunity with the loan program. You know, we didn't know what was going to come out of that. And we've got 11 businesses that are all over the county, ranging from petting zoos to construction firms that are reaching out to seek assistance to help them not survive the pandemic, but to grow. And that was really the intent of the changes to the program, was to support future growth of these businesses. So it is, you know, I think we're in a precarious situation economically. Everybody is ready to come out of this and get to some level of normalcy. And I think there are businesses that are looking to make investments and to respond to the opportunities that are out there. We just have to make sure that we can get through the next few months on the health side and hopefully, you know, get to some level of herd immunity so we don't have to face any significant implications on the health side.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
So I only have maybe two more quick items, but next on the agenda is appointing members to the Soil and Water Conservation District. Has everyone received that memo?
Yes.
Yes.
And I'll review the names that were recommended from Soil and Water Conservation Board. It's Ernest Swift, Farm Bureau, Gary Mahaney, Marsh Ditch Association, along with John Mary, Steve Hoffner for Marsh Ditch also, and William Phelps.
I'll move it.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, carried. Thank you. And so I only have one more short item. I'm going to call on Jen Prosick. Somewhere's in all of our shifts through different meetings, we did have a piece of old business having to do with the animal cruelty cases and the seizures and how the DA would follow through with it. So therefore, Jen's gonna just give us a quick update on the process for an RFP. And this is mainly targeted at, should we have it? We don't have any cases now that are pressing our budget, but we want to be prepared should we have a large animal seizure and the SPCA would not be able to accommodate everything that may be involved with the case. So therefore, Jen, are you online?
I'm here. I'm in person. I'm here. Thank you. So Mr. Mullen had brought that back up on Monday with Brooks and Public Safety and Correction. So I went back through my emails and it had just fallen off people's radar. So Brooks and Andy are in communication and they're going to get an RFP together. I circled back with everybody. It's a rather technical RFP, which is why we needed Brooks' help, because there's only certain areas in the law that this would be able to be utilized under. So Brooke said he would work with Andy and figure out that gap area, and then the RFP could be drafted. So that's where we're at. Hopefully it'll get out here in the next couple of weeks. but luckily we haven't had any cases. So,
So that was just to keep the committee and the legislators informed that we, you know, are moving forward with that to make sure that we get that done.
How about a reminder on the details?
So what happened last year, I can't remember the exact timing. There was a large seizure of animals under the Ag and Markets Law, which actually triggers Brooks's responsibility in certain circumstances to prosecute those cruelty. The animals have to be housed in the meantime. They can't just be released or, you know, killed, or they're evidence. So that housing of those animals for that large seizure had increased a county contract with the SPCA over and above the normal yearly amount. And we do have an agreement with them that if we go over for this reason, so there was some extra funding that went to the SPCA due to this housing, which is what triggered AIP last year to say, hey, can we maybe avoid this by having a more cost-effective place to put these animals during the period of the litigation pending in court. So that's what this RFP would be, is to see if somebody, you know, our idea was possibly there's a farmer who has empty pastures who would not charge a lot, if anything, possibly, who wants the pastures to be grazed during this time period. I mean, who knows? But that was a thought, to cut back on the cost so that the SPCA contract does not go over in these large seizure cases.
Mm-hmm. We're not looking to cut our contract with the SPCA. We're just trying to dovetail into it, if you will. If we get a large animal case and a lot of animals, there's certainly farmers around here that could take some that SPCA would not be able to handle. That's the intent, Mike.
Thank you.
Could I say something?
Sure, Beth.
Years ago, we had a case, bunch of horses, yeah. And then after the case was done, the animal place there, SPCA over there, wouldn't sell them because they wanted to keep charging us because of they wouldn't sell them unless they were sterilized. They got some policy that an animal can't leave there unless they're sterilized, and it was going to cost a fortune to have these horses sterilized. To me, as a farmer, you just take them to sale and sell them. If they have horses, more horses in the future, so be it. There'll be a new owner. And we're trying to stay out of the county getting stuck paying for this.
Yeah, that's part of the issue, because you have no kill shelters, or you have that they have to all be spayed and neutered, or those sorts of things, which they're required under their grant funding at the SPCA. So, you know, where there is those loopholes in the law when one of these cases come, that's the alternative, you know, having them put someplace out so there's no cost. And in order to have them sterilized or put down, the court has to order it during the court proceeding. So yeah, in that situation, if the court had ordered it, the agency that had them can't do it under their funding. So that's another one of the loopholes that we're trying to find someplace to put these in case that happens.
Yeah, I mean, the court is taking the ownership away from the individual, and then they're over there at that facility. If that's done, why can't the county just take them to the horse auctions, and you take them to horse auctions to get rid of them?
Yeah, and that's all controlled by statute. So I agree. It becomes an extreme county charge, and that's the whole purpose of the RFP, is to flush out those issues to find alternatives.
Okay. So clear on that update. I just want to move quickly to one short item to discuss goals, in case the committee has come up with anything else in their minds. Of course, I had re-looking at the emergency relief loan fund, but you know, that's been reworked, and we only support it with administrative dollars anyway, so our input there is limited. Negotiated an agreement with VRBO, the same as we do Airbnb. That was the other goal of the committee. Jack, do you have a comment about that?
Nope, that would just be tasking us to do that. Again, we've reached out to NYSAC. I know Carol had a conversation through Intercounty with NYSAC, but you know, you adopt that as a goal, and we'll reach out to the government relations people at VRBO and try to see what we can get.
Mm-hmm. This is Hilda. I think that's a very important goal and probably the most important one that we can have.
I agree.
I agree with Hilda. I do wonder about the timing on that, if we should push it back maybe until after March or this summer, as you know, some businesses are still suffering from the COVID aspects of the economy. But we may not necessarily have to do that because I don't know if it's going to be adopted until the end of this year anyway. I don't know how long those things take to get put in place.
Oh, it probably takes 6 months minimum. I would say if it went anyway, where Airbnb did, we had a lot of discussions and a lot of going back and forth between the attorneys.
Okay.
I don't see any value to delaying starting the process because it does take that amount of time. So the sooner we start, the sooner we can get something in place.
I agree.
I don't see that it's going to hurt the businesses because the renter really pays the fee.
Right.
It doesn't impact their income at all.
And the thing is, it's added to the rent. So it's not really affecting anybody other than the person who's going to do the renting. They just pay more.
They'll pass it along. And actually, if you were successful in doing this, it would be easier on the renters, the people who rent, or rentors, the people who rent the homes, to folks coming in from out of town. As opposed to if you folks decided to impose the bed tax on all rental properties, then the individual homeowner would have some additional responsibility for reporting, collecting, distributing to us, where this way they go through VRBO, it's just taken off the top, it's added to the fee and remitted to us.
And the county gets the revenue. It's a simple process.
Easy peasy.
Yeah.
Okay. Robin, can I make a comment?
Sure.
I was wondering if it was appropriate for this committee to consider looking into what it would take to expand the bus route hours. One of the things for workforce development is that you might have people that are eligible to work that don't have vehicles to get back and forth to work. And I had Amy work up numbers for me way back when as to how much it would cost to make the bus run more hours than it currently runs. And I would like to see us address that because that might help solve some of our workforce issues.
Good suggestion. Anybody have any feelings about it? I think it, you know, I see the gas prices rising. So we may get ourselves back into the situation where we do have ridership again.
Yeah, certainly if you adopted that, like Kelly mentioned with Amy, Matt could do a study and provide information for you.
And also ProAction helps people in several different ways of getting a job, but also getting to work. So in conjunction with ProAction, I think that's a good idea.
Okay, Jack, so we add that to our goals list?
Okay. If you'd like to, sure, we can take that on.
What's the committee's preference here?
Sure.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Okay, we're in agreement. So that's the end of my agenda for business. Does anyone have anything else? And if not, call for adjournment.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're done. Lambic next.